This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. So just imagine talking about some of the most intimate moments of your life in front of a room full of strangers. Sounds terrifying, right? Well, this kind of storytelling has really taken off in recent years. Organizations like The Moth have popularized events where everyday people can share their stories. The Triangle has its own storytelling nonprofit. It's called The Monty. Storytelling organization's been around for the past 12 years. This Saturday, it will celebrate the best storytellers of the year in the annual HIPPO Awards. Jeff Polish is the founder and executive director of The Monty, and he joins me now. Jeff, welcome back. So good to see you.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
12 years. How wonderful. And for those who don't know about The Monty, sort of set it up for us. What is The Monty?
I mean, it's just we invite people to tell personal stories on a stage in front of a live audience. It's very simple in its conceit. It's I mean, it's almost too simple, and yet it's so powerful at the same time, because somebody stands up, they're nervous. This is their life story, in a sense, or at least a small piece of it. It's vulnerable. It's real. They're taking a risk by standing up there. And then they're speaking their truth. And they can't see the audience. You know, they can feel them. They can hear them. You know, maybe they can catch a glimpse of a head moving, but what happens every time that we produce a show is that we are creating community through the telling of these personal stories.
How do you create the safe space, though? Because in order to be a good story and one that keeps bringing audiences back year after year, this vulnerability is critical. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you need to feel safe if you're going to open up like that.
Right. I mean, it's simple and it's, you know, difficult at the same time. So the first thing that occurs at every show is that you see the host, which on Saturday, it's me. I will welcome everybody. I will tell a story that is revealing. It's somewhat vulnerable in a way, and it's funny, it's light, but I'm setting the tone. And then we're presenting storytellers that have been well prepared for what they're going. I mean, these are well crafted and developed stories.
You work with them, so talk about that process.
Oh yeah, it's a really intense process at times. It's a 3-step process where they will pitch a story idea to us in about 200 words, letting us know what happens in the story that they want to tell, mm-hmm. how the characters change, and what it's about. And based on that, we will start working with them, the ones that we select. And we're just, at first, we're just mining for information. Tell me about this. Tell me about that. I want to hear more about the thing that you talked about here. What does this mean to you? Because we're going deep. And it gets left out on the table. And then from there, we'll enter the next stage, which is now let's construct the scaffolding of a story. And we'll do it in a way that is interesting and engaging and relatable and has impact. And that's where I come in, because these people are the experts in their life experience, and I'm the expert in story. And so together, we will develop the best possible story for the event. And we discover a lot of things in the process, but I don't let them go. I'm not trying to add my own stamp on it. I don't let them go until that story is just right. It's ready. It's authentic. It's natural. And it is real.
Well, we're going to talk about some of those elements and that blend of bringing your story to the table and then ways in which we craft it so it's recognizable to an audience. But I suppose we should hear an example. This is a preview of one of this year's nominated storytellers for the HIPPO Awards, Kevin Ginsberg. Let's listen.
I'm at the Trinity Center, the Episcopal Retreat Center that my congregation goes to every year for a weekend-long retreat. And I'm called up to do Hagbah. So I step up, I open the Torah up. I get 4 columns that day. I'm feeling confident. I bend to the knees and I lift the Torah up and I just don't have it. It starts to fall. My wrists are not in the right position. It is falling. It is past the point of no return. It's the center of gravity is past itself, and there's nothing that I can do to stop it from falling. And time stands still. It's that moment where 1 second lasts forever, like a car wreck about to happen. And everything I've been talking about for the last 12 minutes floods through my head, and a million thoughts and a million questions. What's going to happen? What am I going to do? How am I going to recover from this? What are my children going to think? What are my children going to think about how I react in this situation? And there's complete silence in the room. And that silence is broken by the first words I hear 16-year-old Sophie say. Jesus Christ! As her hands miraculously appear out of nowhere and catch the Torah just at the last moment before it touches the ground.
Kevin Ginsberg, a nominated storyteller for the Monty's Hippo Award in the comedy category. I'm talking with Monty founder and executive director Jeff Polish. The Hippo Awards this Saturday at the Carolina Theater in Durham, and you can find out all the details at our website, stateofthings.org. Now tell us, there's probably some backstories, some things that we may need to know.
Well, so yes. So with regards to this clip that we just heard, for a Jew, there are a lot of bad things you can do as a human being, but dropping the Torah is a no-no. And apparently, I've heard stories. I'm Jewish. I've heard stories about people diving and catching Torahs as they're falling to the ground. But apparently, if it does hit the ground, this is what Kevin says in his story: the person who drops it and everyone in the room have to fast for 40 days. Mm. Is that's
a lot. Yeah.
I wouldn't do it. I'm not that great of a Jew, actually. But but you know, this is not just a silly story about, you know, a thing that happened over a 5-second period. It's actually about community and about how much he values his community, and in this moment how he feels that he's about to let them down. And we can all relate to that. Look, Jews, non-Jews alike, many of us have never held a Torah up in the air. And many of us have never been confronted with this specific thing, but we all know what it feels like to let down one's community, or at least feel like we're about to let down one's community. And that's the universal truth that this story is tapping into.
It's great stuff. And of course, Sophie called on a Jew to save the day. So there's that too. There's that bringing the thing full circle. We talked about stories, maybe not this one in particular, but somebody comes to you with a pitch. It sounds good to you. You start working on it. Have you ever had somebody who they started with one story, and in the process of working out that story, you realize there's another story here entirely?
Oh, yeah. Oh, this happens. I wouldn't say regularly, but it's one of those things where, you know, all we have is 200 words and, you know, some hook, you know, that they're trying to put into their pitch to engage us. And so then we start to develop, and I realize that, you know, what they've pitched is actually not going to work very well. One person once in their pitch, it was, they're in a tent camping. They look up through this little window of their tent and they see a bear peeking in. And I'm like, oh my God, it's a story of a bear attack. Well, when we started working together, what I realized is that it wasn't a bear ever. He thought it was a bear. It was a cow. The cow didn't attack him. He runs. And that would make a nice little 3-minute anecdote, right? But as we're working together and we're talking, I realized that the real story is in his relationship with his cousin, who was also there camping. And that story, it was tender. It was filled with you know, love, but also a tragic death. And that became, we pivoted on this bear cow story, which was in the story, but it wasn't the full story. Yeah. The story was about a relationship and a life cut short.
Well, that leads to my next question, which is, as you go through this process, how much is revealed to, because somebody came to you and said, I got this great story. I got to be on the Monty. They got to take this. And they do, and they work with you. And then in the process of working this out, something is revealed to them that they didn't know about this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that happened. And it's amazing. Like, people often say, oh, you're like a therapist. And I want to stay away from that because I'm not here to reveal, you know, any, you know, life tips on how they should go through their lives. But what I do want to do is examine. So in a way, there is therapy-like, you know, tendencies here. We're just examining these life experiences and trying to find meaning in them. And I am all about for the story, but yeah. if they realize something that's interesting that they never thought of, then we've done something even that's like a bonus.
Well, yeah, because so often we tell stories over and over again, and there's something appealing about it. You know, it keeps it wins every time you tell it, and we like it, so we like to tell it. But so often it's actually concealing something from ourselves. I mean, it's fascinating how these stories that we tell over and over again have some nugget that keeps knocking on the door saying, you forgot this part. You keep leaving out this part, Frank.
Right.
And when you put that part in, all of a sudden there was something that you never wanted to know about yourself. That you should know about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It comes crashing in. Say, thank you for opening the door. It was chilly out there.
It's really an interesting process because, like, I mean, people come to us with stories and they might not know why they're pitching that particular story. And in the process, and a story is never about what happened. It's about why it happened. Like, what is the deeper meaning here? And this oftentimes is largely unexamined by the storyteller, and that's what we work on in the process of developing it.
Well, let's hear another sample now, a clip of a nominated storyteller, Blakely Lord, talking about her experience as a teacher. We may need you to set this up a little bit.
Right. So Blakely had a career change early in life from attorney to teacher, and she thought she was going to be, you know, one of those inspiring heroes for these young kids. And you know, she gets beaten down pretty hard. You know, she realizes that reality is different. And in the process of getting beaten down, she builds a new template of what a teacher is, which is just a guide, and they're the heroes.
And then I thought, okay, you got to be smarter than, you know, the second semester freshman. Let's try using some reverse psychology. So next time he came into the room, he's, you know, I'm back. Don't you miss me? And I said, I did. I missed you so much. You're here for your hug? And he went, no. And he ran away. And I thought, score. But, like, he came back the next day. And so every day, like, you're here for your hug. And then one day, I said, you're here for your hug? And he said, yes. And he hugged me. He crushed me in this huge, bone-crunching hug. And in that moment of real human connection, I realized something so important. I thought that I had been hired to teach English. But I was teaching children. And that's, I mean, what a blessing.
Blakely Lord sharing her story on the Monty stage, nominated for a Hippo Award this year, talking to the Monty's founder and executive director, Jeff Polish, now. So that's an incredible story. And when these stories are nominated, what's the process? How do you get nominated for these?
So I will first say that I have very little to do with the nominations. We put together a committee filled with Monty insiders, producers, board members, etc. And I administer, you know, I'm an administrator of this, but I basically give everyone stories to listen to. Then we get together for a discussion. Mm-hmm. And then everybody, you know, in privacy fills out a score sheet, submits it to me, and then I do whatever I want. No, and then I tabulate, and then we release it.
Got another clip here from Michael Cooper talking about his experience covering homelessness in one town in North Carolina. What do we need to know about this clip?
Well, we need to know that Michael is really covering this one guy who's inspiring him. He is a man who every day goes into the woods and brings blankets and care and support to homeless people in Hickory, North Carolina. And based on, as a result of this inspiring figure, it caused Michael to look inside of himself and confront his own past with addiction.
And he started going through things in his own life, so he began to feel some kind of connection to other people, I don't know, but he'd see homeless people walking around in town there, and he'd wonder where they went. He ran into one of them outside of a convenience store, and he followed him into the woods. It was there that he saw a couple of guys in a sleeping bag in the mud, curled up with no shelter. And every day for 10 years, Roger keeps going back to the woods. After seeing that, I wasn't there to write about him at first, but heck, after seeing that, that's gotten me to thinking. I had never been to the woods of Hickory before that. I had never been homeless. But I knew what it meant to hit bottom in life. 6 years before I did that story, I was in jail. I had gotten caught up in the same drug crisis that had affected a lot of the people there in Hickory, and I was one of the lucky ones.
Michael Cooper, nominated storyteller for the Monty's Hippo Award in the drama category. I'm talking to Monty founder and executive director Jeff Polish now. What stands out for you in that story?
Well, it's the fact that, you know, this reveal to, you know, hundreds of people is something that he's never talked about. I mean, there were people that were there to support him, friends, that didn't know that he had struggled with drug addiction.
We got time to squeeze one more in this segment, and I want to talk about Steve Dougherty. This is a clip that we should know a little bit about before we actually play the clip, right?
So this is a story about you know, heroes and villains in the context of high school, right? And Steve is a strong guy, but was non-confrontational, never wanted to have skin in any game. And in this moment, he's being confronted by a bully, and he responds in a non-committal way, and then he sees someone step up in a very committal way, and he's inspired by it.
And Eric swelled his chest and said, "Who are you?" And I thought for sure Jason was going to try my none of your business sass, because it had worked, but he didn't. He didn't. What he did was exquisite, and it was immediate, and it was bold. He looked Eric in the eye, and he said, "Jason Jones." And I was awestruck. Like, that was not anonymous, and you even added, like, naughty bits to make it hotter. To my young mind, I think that was the most badass, reckless, brave, confident, awesome thing I had seen in my life. And I wasn't able to credit Jason with it then. I had to ponder it for decades like I have. But that something shifted in me in that moment.
Steve Dougherty, a nominated storyteller for this year's Hippo Awards from the Monty. I'm talking to the Monty's founder and executive director, Jeff Polish, and we'll talk. In fact, there's going to be the Hippo Awards Saturday at the Carolina Theater in Durham. And of course, we've got the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just very briefly, I got about 30 seconds or so, but give me a sense of the construction, and we can talk more about it. Kind of what you might have added to a story like that, how you would have added structure to, you know, what Steve brought to you.
Sure. So what he brings, you know, in his opening is this scenario. It actually, what we didn't hear in the clip is that there was this rival high schools. And they heard that the other rival high school was going to, like, vandalize their high school, so they waited and all this stuff, and that's the scenario. You know, is this surprise, like, you're not going to vandalize, like, we're going to stand up here and chase you off. But now that we have that situation, we want to build out. What does it mean? How did this impact you? How did you change as a result of this stage in your life?
This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. The Triangle nonprofit, The Monty, has featured more than 1,000 stories over the years from people of all walks of life. Topics range from overcoming a fear of spiders to hitting rock bottom as a drug addict. Jeff Polish is the founder and executive director of The Monty. He says the mission of the organization is to create community through telling of stories, and he's with me now. Talk about this and the ways in which we create community through storytelling. I mean, people are actually in the same room. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and they, everybody shows up a stranger, essentially, unless you came with your friend, right? But most of the people in the room don't know each other. And I will also say this, like, when they leave, they're not exactly buddy-buddy. But what happens when the lights dim at the Monte and somebody stands up with a bright light in their face and says something vulnerable and real is that the people in the audience are struck with this idea that, oh my God, like that's me. Like I didn't know that somebody else felt that or experienced that. I see myself in this story, in this person. And whether they, you know, that person approaches the storyteller after the show or not, there is a sense of community, a sense of belonging, a sense of not feeling so alone anymore. And that's what we are really doing. And I didn't know I was doing this when I first started the organization, but it was a slow realization that this is just, it's not just Story Hour with Jeff Polish. Mm-hmm. It's something that is much richer, much deeper, and much more important.
Yeah, and it would seem to me that even if the stories are somewhat exotic to me, the things that they are in no way the events of my life, there might be, you know, sort of ways in which I can identify. But even if not, I can, if I'm empathizing, there's another human being. It gets me out of my head, and mm-hmm. and it connects us in that way. Mm-hmm. You are worthy of my attention, you know, in a very positive way. So I think it's all great stuff. Has anybody just kind of stood there and frozen and just not been able to get through their story?
Oh, it's happened.
Yeah,
you know, about 6 or 7 times in our 12-year history.
Oh, not many. That's
and. I will tell you, Frank, that those are some of the most inspirational moments for me. Like, on the one hand, I don't want the storyteller to be going through that. It's borderline humiliating for them, so I get it. But on the other hand, you will see just what our audience is made of when somebody is standing there struggling. You will see people start clapping, shouting, "You got this." It is inspiring to feel that level of community on display in one room.
Yeah, and then again, that's because I think that's that empathy, mm-hmm. that empathy muscle that you can kind of exercise in that moment, and you feel it with the people sitting around you. Say, "Oh my God, we do care."
Oh yeah,
and you
it's
feel
nice.
It. And it's,
we need some of that.
It ain't a tweet. You know what I mean? That's great stuff. Let's listen to another clip now by a nominated storyteller. I think we could probably go right into this one. This is Jordan Ford.
And Doug and I went to a little restaurant in Adams Morgan, and I don't even remember the name of the restaurant, but I do remember how much I was sweating in the gray shirt that I had on in the middle of DC heat. And I remember being so nervous to talk to him, and I couldn't even look at him while we were having dinner, and I was fumbling over my words, and I ended up spilling my drink. And so, you know, the Southern boy in me immediately went to clean it up by myself. And as I was wiping the water up with a napkin, I felt this hand on top of my hand. And so I thought, whoa, like the waiters here in DC are really friendly. And when I looked up, it was Doug. And so my knee-jerk reaction was to pull my hand away and look around me and make sure that nobody saw. Doug noticed that, and he looked at me and he said, "It's okay. You can be yourself here."
Jordan Ford, nominated storyteller for the Monty's Hippo Award in the drama category. I'm talking to hippie and Monty founder. there's flowers in his hair right now,
yes,
folks.
Indeed.
Jeff Polish is here, and Hippo Awards this Saturday at the Carolina Theater in Durham, and you can get details at our website, stateofthings.org. Tell us more about that story, Jeff.
Oh, this is a great story. I absolutely love it. It's a story that is both funny and tender at the same time. It's a story about somebody who has his own expectations of how his life should go and mixing and being conflicted with his true identity, which is as a gay man. And this story is about him coming to terms with, you know, letting out his own identity to his friends and to his family and to just the world.
And talk about the difference. I think we've touched on some aspects of this, but the difference between telling a story like that to friends. I mean, there's, as you say, there are probably some stories that get told on that stage that have never been told to anyone before,
apart from
your working through it. But others that have, stories like that you might have told friends. The difference between that and having a center stage spotlight and an audience, a rapt audience.
It's amazing how much of a safe space has been created. And part of the safety is that the listeners don't necessarily have to respond in any certain way. Like, for example, imagine if you're sitting across from someone, and I've been in the situation, I've witnessed this situation many times, sitting across from somebody at a cafe, somebody gets vulnerable, they're having a conversation, they start crying. How many times have you witnessed or experienced the other person saying, it's okay, don't cry. I mean, there are a lot of cruel things we can do to one another in our lives. And I'm not, you know, going to rate this up there, but this is a form of cruelty, I think. I mean, it seems like compassion, but what the other person is saying is that you just got real with me.
Right.
You just showed me your true self, and I am uncomfortable right. with that. And maybe they're uncomfortable because they don't know what to say. And that's why in a room full, you know, dark room full of strangers, people don't have that pressure. They can just feel and connect and show the love. Because honestly, like all anybody really needs when they're being vulnerable is to be heard, for somebody to bear witness to their own suffering and to make them feel like it's okay. And I think that's what we do.
Well, you also model the behavior because, again, if I'm in that moment and I don't want you to make me feel uncomfortable, then I say, don't cry.
Yeah.
Right? Because right. you're making me feel uncomfortable. We don't need this now. You right. got your problems. I got mine, pal. So stop crying. You may have that instinct sitting in that audience, but what's happening is that there's another couple hundred people around you more or less modeling a different approach, a different strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And that strategy is be with them.
Mm-hmm.
Be with them in utter silence. Be with them in utter vulnerability. And go ahead and be helpless with them because there's no more solidarity than that.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing, but you're modeling it. You're setting up a situation. Through your Monty,
mm-hmm.
you set up a situation where that can be modeled, taught, and learned. And everybody can go home not feeling like they've been to school.
Yeah. I mean, I've learned so much, you know, about my own, you know, role in this as well. And it's amazing.
Good stuff. Let's listen to another clip right now. A nominated storyteller, Natalie Rich.
I left the Starbucks and I walked into the ICU to Vicky's bedside. She was in a coma. She had just suffered a sudden, unexplained cardiac arrest at work. I interlaced my hand in hers, and I looked into her blank, lifeless eyes. And I remembered our last date just a few nights earlier at the Melting Pot. And then I thought about our last fight just the day before, when I had yelled at her for putting the wrong size battery in my car, the Subaru she had gifted me, causing me to stall out on my way home from work. The I'm sorry roses I bought her were in a vase, still on the kitchen table at home. There are some hard truths in this story. Vicky died on January 14th, 2016, and the doctors never figured out what stopped her heart. She was my first love, and she died. And with her went all the dreams that we had. There would be no wedding, no baby, no trips, no more date nights at Melting Pot, no more fights and I'm sorry roses. We would never live out our old lady life together.
That was Natalie Rich, a storyteller nominated for a Hippo Award in the overall category, but for a different story. And I'm talking now to the Monty's founder and executive director, Jeff Polish. Jeff, tell me about constructing the show, because you've got these powerful, poignant stories that are going to end like this, and then you've got some wonderfully comic stories.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, as a producer, an executive producer, kind of envision the show coming together?
Oh, it's a puzzle. Every show is different. How do we go from drama to comedy and then back? And, you know, what's too overwhelming? I mean, we have 5 storytellers at any curated show, and we take a break after 3. So the 3rd story is going to be the one that couldn't possibly be followed. You know, like, oh, nobody wants to get up after this person. We need a break. We need a drink. And then the 5th story is the one where, you know, this is what we want people to feel as they're walking out of the room. Like there's a bit of an uptick, a little inspiration. Maybe they've laughed. Whatever. They're enriched. And that's the last feeling that I want them to have.
Have you ever had a pitch, a story that you really liked, and you worked with the individual, and they were great, and then at some point you realized no, this shouldn't be on a stage.
Many times. Yeah. Many times. And it's, you know, I have two constituents when I'm developing a program. The first is the storyteller. I want them, they came to us for a reason, and I want them to get everything that they wanted out of this process. And then I'm also looking after the audience. I want them to be engaged, entertained, moved, etc. But some stories are not ready to be told. If it's not examined or processed and there's no distance from the trauma, then I think that it's unsafe and it's unwise to put them in a position where they're, you know, speaking their truth, because it's muddled at this point.
Well, I know you have a wide variety of stories, from the dramatic, very personal, very touching, and then, as we said, some of them are wildly, wildly funny.
Mm-hmm.
Let's listen to this.
But I came to the conclusion that it was probably food poisoning. And the reason that I knew it was probably food poisoning is that I realized that I was going to have diarrhea. On the boat, with the college boy on my first date. And I had only seconds to solve this problem. Again, like, I was a smart kid, I was on it, and I said to him, like, I would like to go swimming. That sounds great. He said, you know, this isn't really a swimming area. Also, the water is really, you know, like, it's deep, it's really cold out here. I said, no, swimming sounds good. And he said, well, you know, like, we don't have suits. And I looked down at his clothes. I said, this stuff is pretty much, you know, like, wash and wear. I think it's fine. And I jumped out of the boat and into the water just in time. And so then, I mean, it was cold. It was so cold. But I was happy. I mean, I was happy to be in the water.
Sarah Ford, a storyteller at the Monte, sharing her first date horror story. This Saturday, the annual Hippo Awards at the Carolina Theater for the Monte at 8 o'clock. And you can find out details at our website, stateofthings.org. I'm talking to Monte founder and executive director Jeff Polish today on The State of Things. Great story. Tell us more about that one, Jeff.
Oh, my God. Well, Sarah is one of our, you know, most successful and most popular storytellers, and she will be telling a story at this Saturday's show. This is, like, such a perfect type of story, because she defines herself as this type A, you know, hard-charging person. Like, she's in high school. She wants to go on her first date. And yet, it all goes wrong. I mean, this is perfect fodder for storytelling, right?
Right.
Conflict,
right.
Hilarity, and
the fates. The fates. You got to have the fates.
Right. Mm. And, you know, just, you know, the inevitable happens in this story. But at the same time, like, we all know what it feels like to be in a potentially humiliating situation, which is what she was in. But she, as she says many times in that clip, she was on it. And she's resourceful, and she will solve the problem as she always does, as you hear all of her stories.
Took the dive. You've been doing this for 12 years now. It's fascinating to me because, on the one hand, you have to work with a structure that has to be recognizable to all of us, that has to be, in some ways, structurally the same. Every story has to be unique. How do you keep it fresh for you?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, there are little things that we do. I mean, like, we have an interesting event coming up in June with Chapel Hill Magazine. It's a food oriented. Somebody will tell a story, a chef, and then everyone will enjoy the dish that that relates to that story. That's gonna be great, right? But honestly, it never gets old when people share their truth, when people are vulnerable. And for me, just in this job where people come to me and they, you know, let it out in front of me, that's never going to get old. To me, it's just the power of story is, it's inspiring. And I'm humbled that people trust this program enough to share, you know, their deepest, most important story with us.
We are so happy that you shared all of this with us. Jeff Polish, founder and executive director of the Monte, This Saturday, the annual Hippo Awards at the Carolina Theater in Durham, 8 o'clock. You can find out more about the event at our website, stateofthings.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter and get a daily preview of our lineup. State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Amanda Magnus, Grant Hollab-Mormon, and Katie Barron. Jenny Lawson is our technical director. Josie Tarras, our intern. Jeff Polish, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.